Okay.
Donation on their support part.
Not only are our new security trip forces closing, but they will be our conventional forces also are modern, strong, air, credible, and during the past 4 years, however, because of progress we've made, we are more on inclusion, reducing tensions, great power. We have also been able to reduce tension, size, market, and perception. We have reduced our total military manpower. We have closed large numbers of units. Most important, all of us, chief, public checkers, our security, and government, right now. Now, this campaign, our homes, those massive food cuts, federal, and local expenses. Cuts we could drastically fluctuate, not just the back, but the muscle of our defense. These are the specific proposals. America's strategic bomber, of course, our precision missile, our tactical air wing for 30%. Development of the new B-1 bomber, canceled. The number of Navy warships cut almost in half. Our aircraft carrier would be cut from 16 to 6. They would cut the Marine Corps by almost 1/4. 7 fleet bombers, 6 fleet Mediterranean, shut and reduced immediately. Missile modernization programs like the Minuteman III and Poseidon would be halted. The result would be to leave America with the second strongest army, the second strongest second strongest air force in the world. Some might ask, what's wrong with being second? Isn't it jingoistic nationalism? The United States always going to be number one? The answer to that question is that the day the United States becomes the second strongest nation in the world, peace and freedom will be dead in the everywhere in the world. We do not seek power for its own sake. What we seek is the assurance that our survival and that of other freedom military forces are more powerful than the United States. History has taught us that the war is caused not by the strength of one nation alone, but the weakness of one nation in relation to another. Last spring in Moscow, I signed an agreement for the limitation of offensive and defensive nuclear weapons on the part of the United States and Soviet Union. We could never reach that agreement if the United States had unilaterally given up the ATM to some degree. Or if we've begun stripping away our offensive missile forces. If we were to take such action now, we would destroy any chance for further arms and division of the second round of using nuclear arms and provocation. If we unilaterally reduce the forces now supporting our NATO allies in Western Europe, as has also been proposed by our opponents, we would throw away the prospect of mutual and balanced reduction of Soviet forces. Strength and resolution command is strength. They are incentive for negotiation and peace. Weakness and naive sentimentality breed contempt. They are open invitation to Russian tactics and aggression against the world. That is why I say, let us never send the President of the United States to the breakfast table as head of the second strongest nation in the world. It may be argued, as long as we have our nuclear weapons, we can fight the war. But the United States relies heavily on the policy.
staff will become totally unrealistic. If we put any longer deterrent pressure against the small nation, particularly on the survival of my threat, or my own survival, if our only option were a nuclear retaliation, which would lead to nuclear suicide for the United States, the mutual destruction would be too great. Both sides would know. No potential aggressor would respect American security and its wider friends and allies on the world stage. Middle East. Baldwin, Clinton, Syria, Tanzania, and Jordan, but might have become a great world crisis prior to the defeat of the movement to U.S. citizens in the Eastern Hemisphere. The possibility of a war threatened the existence of Israel and dragged in great power into this burden. American naval superiority kept the peace in that situation, where nuclear threats would have been powerless to lose them. That is why, for the sake of Israel and other nations, all nations who are committed, and other small nations we are committed to defend, as well as for our own sake, we must never give up our superiority on the land, or in the air, and in the name of both of them. Time is not to stand up and answer from our own country, complaining that American power is an evil force in the world. Those who say that our foreign policy is selfish, bad, we can be proud of the fact that in 4 years, before it was, the United States has fought only to defend the country in the history, and men who fought in those wars deserve the highest respect this nation can pay. And to those who serve in our peace forces today, those who will serve in years to come in the next draft and next time, and who will volunteer our forces, these are the real heroes of our time. Rather than talking about amnesty, let us honor the leaders who chose to serve America in Vietnam. As this long and difficult war draws to an end, it is time to draw the line on this issue once and for all. There will be no amnesty for draft doctors and deserters after the war. Millions of Americans chose to serve their country in Vietnam. Many gave their lives for this choice. A few others refused to serve or to deserve their country must pay a penalty for their death. A few days before I left for Vietnam, I had a guest at the White House in Britain, Frank Senior, who said, "I'm here now, Roosevelt. Let me share with you a comment which he made to them. The United States," he said, "is the only nation ever become the most powerful in the world without seeking to think for a moment how true this statement was made. This country did not push its way into a position of world leadership. Occupied for generations. That position came to us unsung. But we have borne it nobly and well, guided not by ambition or greed or ideology, but only by the high ideals of human liberty and life's dreams. Unique among the great powers.